You were recently in Ottawa making a presentation in front of the Canadian Human Rights Commission. Can you tell us more about why you were there?
The women that are being held in Saskatchewan Penitentiary, that's a men's prison, and they have a number of federally sentenced women being held there, issued a Canadian human rights complaint. It's a discrimination complaint based on gender, race, and disability. And so a number of equality-seeking groups were there making a presentation to the Canadian Human Rights Committee.
In 1994, footage from an all-male riot squad attacking women in P4W in Kingston was seen by the public. From this, there was an inquiry set up. Can you tell us more about the impact of this event on women's imprisonment in Canada and what followed it?
If people remember back to, and it's what they call certain events at P4W, it was the male emergency response team from one of the men's prison had come over to P4W. They strip searched and did cell extractions of the women that were there and moved them into the solitary confinement units. And the whole thing had been videotaped by the prison itself, by the emergency response team. They video themselves doing these cell extractions, or had in this case anyway. And it was, aired on TV. And from there was an absolute public outcry, just in terms, first of all, of the men going into the women's prisons and going into their cells and forcibly removing them from the cells and forcibly removing their clothing. And there was a public outcry. From that came the Arbour Commission, which looked into those events and made recommendations for the treatment of federally sentenced women in this country.
So what happened with that inquiry? Where did it go?
Well, I just want to say that this inquiry was not the first inquiry. I mean, when P4W opened, it opened in 1834 or something, and, you know, within a year of its opening, there had already been inquiries into the treatment of women in prison. And I think from that point, there's been 50 separate inquiries into the treatment of women in prison in Canada. And there's, whether it's like an inquiry or a commission, what happens is recommendations get made. And so over the years, there's been numerous recommendations made for the treatment of women prisoners. And so then from there, what you have is a situation whether the government is going to actually follow these recommendations, whether Correction Service of Canada is going to implement the recommendations, or whether they're just going to remain that yet one more recommendation.
So how do we get from this inquiry to actually closing P4W and moving women to these five regional prisons? What was the process involved in that?
Well, part of the recommendations that had come out of the Arbour Commission were to have more community correctional centers, or more community settings for women in prison. And, you know, I mean, she wasn't the first one ever to make that recommendation. Like I said, over the years, there's been numerous recommendations, you know, the Task Force on Federally Sentenced Women. And I think recently somebody pointed out to me that in the very first inquiry into the treatment of women in prison in Canada, one of the recommendations had been to build, you know, cottage-style living spaces for women, because the majority of women who are in prison are not a threat to the community, they're not in for violent crimes, and what I guess is seen to be a more fitting system is more of a community-based system. And so after certain events at P4W and the Arbor Commission, it was decided yet again to close prison for women. And by the way, that was the only prison in Canada for federally sentenced women, so it meant any woman who was doing over 2 years would be sent to Kingston, Ontario, to be in this prison. So they decided, okay, they would open 5 regional prisons and have women closer to their home communities in a lesser security type of setting, more community-oriented, more community-based, more resources in each area for women who are getting out of prison. And that's not really how it turned out to be, you know.
I was going to say, it sounds like these are all, participating in these inquiries and commissions, a lot of community groups making, you know, really sound and effective recommendations. Now, what I'm wondering is how do we get from that, you know, having a commission or inquiries and sort of a vision where people are involved saying we need all these things have been called for before, to where we're at now, where there is an issue before the Human Rights Commission of women being in men's prisons. And so how did the vision start changing, and what were some of the things that were sort of indicators that this wasn't going to go the way that, you know, community activists wanted to go? Or how do you see the problems with that?
Well, I think the problems were numerous, and one of the things that happened, and this is what I have heard, is when they opened the Edmonton Institution for Women and transferred a number of women from P4W to that prison, and there had been, I think, a suicide and also maybe an escape from the prison. So immediately there was that reaction, and it's always an extreme overreaction, that we need to strengthen up the security of the prison. And when these regional prisons opened, they were all supposed to be multi-level prisons, which meant that there would be minimum security, maximum security, medium security women in these prisons. So then what the response was, okay, we need to get all of the maximum security women out of these prisons. And I'm speaking, you know, as this is what came from the government and the Correctional Service of Canada, get the maximum security women out of these regional prisons and tighten up the security of those new prisons by, you know, putting up big fencing and monitoring cameras and just overall heightened security. So they took any woman who was classified as maximum security and put them into isolated units within existing men's prisons.
So this is in through sort of the mid to late 90s, is this when this was happening?
Yeah.
And so what was their...
That was 7 years ago.
So this happened in all the regional prisons, even though this incident was only in Edmonton. So they're beefing up security, they're taking maximum security women out of these regional prisons, putting them in isolated units across the country, in men's prisons. And so what was their... Was that their final plan, or were they just saying this was a temporary measure and then they were going to do something else, or...?
Well, I don't know if they said that, what their plan was, but I do know that it's, you know, been 7 years that women have been in the men's prisons. And so now what they've done is decided to build maximum security prisons within the regional prisons. They're separate units, they call them pods, but they're still prisons, and it's going to be a separate structure from the rest of the prison, from medium and minimum security. It's going to be a maximum security prison within the grounds of the women's prisons.
for people who maybe have never been inside a prison, what would be the differences for being in that maximum security unit of the women's prison? What kinds of things would you have to go through? And how is that, are they changing sort of the definition of how maximum security women are treated?
Yes. Well, if you go into, say, the women's prison and it's multi-level, then you would have all three levels of security in the same building or on the same grounds. In these new maximum security prisons that they're going to be building, they're going to have the maximum security prisoners isolated from the rest of the prison population, and they're setting up these new regimes, they're calling them, to have it so that if you're in maximum security for the first six months, you stay in your cell, you have all your meals in your cell, you're not allowed contact with other prisoners. If you come out of your cell for visits or for therapy or to see the nurse, then you need to come out with your hands in handcuffs and your legs shackled, and you need to be escorted by two guards. And then, you know, you work your way down this little program that's within the maximum security unit, still not having contact with minimum or medium security women, but within the maximum security unit itself, you can work your way down so that you get to a point where when you come out of your cell, you have only the handcuffs and one guard instead of handcuffs, leg shackles, and two guards. And so throughout your sentence or your imprisonment in maximum security, you don't have contact with any of the other women.
And is this is all new?
Yes, it's all new. And it's not like that in men's maximum security prisons. You know, if you're looking at it in terms and relationships to a men's prison, then it would be something like similar to the special handling units that they have in Canada. But this would just be any woman who is classified maximum security. And, you know, I just want to talk maybe a bit about that, because your security classification, everybody who gets sentenced to a term of imprisonment has an assessment done to assess your risk and your needs, and that determines your security classification. And so there's maximum security, there's medium security, there's minimum security. And within that assessment, they take into consideration all kinds of different things. It's not just the crime that you committed or the length of your sentence. They look at, you know, whether you've had, like, history of physical or sexual abuse, whether you have support in the community, whether you're in contact with your family, whether you have drug and alcohol issues, whether you have any mental health issues. And so, in essence, what they're looking at is not necessarily and totally your risk to society, to community, or to yourself. They're looking at women's needs and translating these needs into risk. And so at this point in Canada, the majority of women who are classified as maximum security are First Nations women and women with mental health needs.
You were recently in Ottawa at the Human Rights Commission and talking about you know, violations of human rights of women inside men's prisons. Can you just tell us a little bit of some of the conditions for women in those men's prisons?
When the Correctional Service of Canada has set up programs for prisoners, they've set the programs up for and to meet the needs of men in prison, because women overall make up a very small percentage of the prison population. And so when there's money to be had and money to be spent and programs to be developed, they've been developed primarily to meet the needs of men, and then sometimes they're adapted to meet the needs of women. And, you know, whether that adaptation is, you know, appropriate or not. So what you have when you have women who are taken and put into the men's prisons, they don't even have the resources that you would have, say, at a woman's prison. So basically, they are in a little unit, you know, maybe they've got a floor, you know, or an area that's set aside for them. But because the numbers are, again, so few, they don't have all of the programs, you know, and access to the rest of the prison. Like, say, if you were at the women's prison, then you would at least have, you know, access to the yard or, you know, whatever programs are being held there, right? But because there's so few women that are being held in each of the men's prisons, there's basically nothing there for them in way of, you know, facilities or for programs. And, you know, basically for outside community support. A lot of the prisons are situated, you know, outside of urban areas. And, you know, that's one thing that really cuts down on the amount of outside support that anybody has. So basically, you know, we say that these women have been held in isolation there, and that it's a further form of segregation, solitary confinement for them.
What do you think is behind these recent changes to the treatment of maximum women? Like, what's their motivation for this? Why now?
Well, I think why now is because there has been, you know, a lot of public pressure to get the women out of the men's prisons. You know, like I said, it has been a long time. It has been 7 years. You know, that's like 7 years of solitary confinement for these women. There's been pressure, you know, from the outside community, pressure from within, you know, to get them out of the men's prisons. And so their response, I guess, has been to build maximum security prisons at the regional prisons for them. When, you know, right from the beginning, once they built those perimeter fences and increased the security level, they could have had the maximum security women at the regional prisons right from the beginning, you know, because they already have like the static and the stationary means to deal with any problem that may arise. And so I think that they're getting the women out of there because they have to. And, you know, basically I think that once again, they've ignored every recommendation that has been made in terms of building these new maximum security units. Like, even when you look at the Corrections and Conditional Release Act, you know, when it talks about holding people in the least restrictive manner, you know, and most supportive manner possible, how can they interpret that into building maximum security prisons? You know, and at the same time, they're not, you know, they're not using the alternatives to incarceration for the lower security women. You know, those women should be moving out of the prison system back into the community, yet, you know, they've taken the option of building maximum security prisons. Me personally, I think why is because I think prisons in Canada is a growth industry. You know, when we look at looking back to when there was P4W, one prison for federally sentenced women, and then they built five new prisons for women, the increase in women's incarceration in this country jumped, right? Because every prison they built, they needed to keep full. And more women were sent to prison as a result. And now they're building 6 maximum security units. And, you know, 4 at this point, what I think the number is, you know, between 30 and 35 women in the country are considered to be maximum security. They're building like 60 cells. And, you know, if you look at what happened when they went from 1 prison to 5 prisons, those numbers increased. As soon as they go from having, you know, cells for 30 maximum security women to having 60, you know, that is going to increase too, right? Even though at a time where we are having decreasing crime rates, then what you see is also an increase in the public fear. And, you know, to me, I think a lot of that has got to do with the media and the sensationalization of individual cases. Mm-hmm. And it really, you know, seems to be an overwhelming, I think, sense of fear that is really disproportionate to the reality of crime, and especially of women's crime in this country.
So, just getting back to what's going on provincially, there's a whole number of changes happening to women's prisons. They're planning on closing the Burnaby Correctional Center for Women in 2004. There's women there of all different security levels, federal, provincial, and remand. So what's happening to the women?
Well, as far as I know, this is what is going to happen. For the federally sentenced women, the Correctional Service of Canada is going to, again, take responsibility for federally sentenced women in BC. Right now, they're at BCCW through an exchange of services agreement, and so even though they're federal prisoners, they're sort of looked after or controlled by the province. So they're going to fall back into the jurisdiction of the Correctional Service of Canada. That's the federal body that deals with prisons. And they're going to be building a new women's prison at Sumas. And Sumas used to be like the men's community correctional center. So all of the men have been, you know, removed from there. They're going to have a multi-level prison there for federally sentenced women. And so whenever you talk about multi-level prison, the security of the prison has to meet the highest needs of the highest classification of prisoner. So it's going to be, you know, again, you know, heavily fenced and secure. So even then, the minimum security women are going to be serving their sentences in basically maximum security settings. Or higher security settings than what their classification warrants. And in that compound, that prison structure, they're going to be building a maximum security prison there.
So this is going to be like the sixth, basically the sixth regional prison
now. Yeah.
So even another prison for women.
Yes, that's true. And so the women will all be transferred over there, except they don't think that they will have the new maximum security prison built in time, so any woman who's maximum security classified in BC will be moved to another region to a maximum security prison there to be transferred back to BC once that prison opens. And for the provincial women, the plan was originally to move all the provincial women, and those are women doing less than a 2-year sentence, to Alouette River, which used to be one of the men's provincial minimum security prisons that was closed. They're going to modify the security and heighten the security, whatever you want to call it, increase the security of that prison and move the provincial women there. and just recently it was announced that it would cost too much money to redo the whole place. So what they're saying now is that any provincially sentenced woman who needs a secure setting, I guess, and those are their words, not mine, needs a secure setting, is going to be held at the Surrey Pretrial Centre, which is basically a men's lockup. And so even as federally sentenced women are bringing, you know, charges of discrimination against the Canadian government for the treatment of women in prison, the BC province is going to start locking up provincially sentenced women in men's prisons. And you're going to see exactly the same thing. You know, what programs are they going to have at Surrey Pretrial for women prisoners?
Because pretrials for people on remand, meaning they're in and out because they're either moving to another prison or getting released because they're waiting for trial, waiting for sentencing. So it's not really a setting where there is any programs anyways otherwise.
Exactly. And so also what access to the prison are these women going to have? Are they going to be, you know, locked in an isolated part of the men's prison? You know, are they going to have, you know, yard time, access to the gym, access to, you know, the chaplaincy or to, you know, the sweat lodge or any of the things that they would have if they were in a women's prison?
Now, this is all because of cutbacks. This is all to save money, but it doesn't sound like, this doesn't seem to me like a scheme of money saving.
I've been doing this for 20 years, and I really have no idea what motivates these people, you know, to exercise this kind of control over other people's lives, you know. And to me, because incarceration in this country is used as a means of social control, right? When you look at the needs of women in prison, if you look at even why women are in prison, women's crime, you know, it all really comes from the basic economic and social standing of women in this country. You know, the majority of women's crime is economic crime, right? It's poverty related. They're in prison. And, you know, they don't need to be in prison at all, you know, let alone sitting in a men's prison, you know, with no resources, no community access, no programs. Like, you know, I don't know why they think that it's going to be good to put these women there. But what I do know is that it's really important that we do everything that we can to stop them.
You know? What is your vision for, you know, women who are currently in prison or come in conflict with the law?
In terms of all of the recommendations that have been made by, you know, every inquiry into the treatment of women in prison in this country have all, you know, basically said the same kind of thing in some way or another, that women don't need to be held in high security prisons. What needs to happen is women have to move out into the community, and if there's like resource centers and structures in place in the community to deal with the needs of women, like really in a sincere kind of way, you know, looking at what leads to women's crime, you know, which is poverty, you know, abuse, and all of those aspects, education, you know, if that is structured in the community, then you're not going to be having, you know, women who are coming into conflict, you know, with the laws. And, you know, basically what we would like to see is that the minimum security women come back into the community. What we would like to see is the medium security women moving through, you know, whether it's into residential treatment houses or transition houses or, you know, other kinds of housing that can bring them back into the community to start dealing, you know, with whatever needs that they have. And definitely bringing the maximum security women out of the men's prisons, out of, well, we don't even want to see them build these new maximum security units, but move them into the existing prisons, which are there and or at this point able to meet the security requirements to have them there. You know, I think women are like highly overclassified as maximum security because, again, like I said, these are, they're taking women's needs and translating that into risk, you know, and deal with those needs in a really constructive kind of way, rather than saying, okay, you know, you have all of these needs, we call you maximum security, we lock you up and leave you there.
And thanks very much for speaking with us today, Phyllis. It was very informative.